My name is Victoria Ketty, and you are listening to WGXC, Accra, 90.7 FM.
Healthful Habits is a new business located on Fairview Avenue in Hudson, New York, offering skincare services, hair recovery, and health and wellness coaching. To learn more about Healthful Habits offerings, they can be reached by phone at 518-210-7458, by email at jennifer@healthfulhabits.org, or online at healthfulhabits.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of John Brigham and Susan Bowell of Holyoke, Massachusetts. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to WGXC.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Podcasts get made locally at WGXC.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Tom needs to return
WGXC
his
attitude.
I'm just confused.
Awesome. Mac, how are you?
Pretty good.
All right. Cody, staying warm?
No.
Awesome.
No, incredibly cold.
Yeah, just wait for it. It gets worse. Tom, how you doing?
I'm on the radio.
Yes, you are. Thank you, Brian. That probably helped out a lot. And Greg, we have Greg tonight bringing in the new year. How you doing?
Happy New Year.
Doing good? You doing all right?
Doing just fine.
Does anybody have any gripes or gears being ground down that they want to get off their chest right now?
Gripes? Gears being ground?
I don't know. Anybody got any lithium batteries out there that aren't working like they should be?
What, do they fail?
In the cold.
Mine just fail at random times because I think my charger's jacked up.
Okay, well, that's your personal problem. I don't think anybody else is dealing with that. By the way, don't let that get away, because if you're not using the correct charger for your lithium batteries, you could turn into a crispy critter.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware of that. I need to put some concrete down below the batteries where it won't set everything on fire.
My batteries are being stored, instead of outside over the winter, in my EV, my mini EV. They're all being stored inside my fireplace. If they all burn up, I don't care. It gets hot inside there. It will be contained and vented outside.
You should consider, though, that that fireplace was built to a spec that wasn't meant to handle a lithium fire.
It's an old fireplace, and I do things to it that are ungodly.
Okay.
And it survived so far. Well, that's technically not true. I've destroyed part of the inside.
You've already destroyed part of it?
The components I was telling you about, that the vents that flow through the back of the chimney
right.
that put heat into my room.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a component inside the fireplace disintegrated and I heard it collapse. And then instead of putting heat into the room, these vents started sucking it straight out the chimney. So I had to seal them off.
Gotcha.
And I'm going to have to rebuild the firebox just to make sure that they're working right next year. Well, at this point, I'm just going to put an insert.
And you think that's a great place to put your lithium batteries?
Yes. I mean...
Okay.
For safety.
Yeah, for safety. It's better... I mean, would it be better sticking them under my bed?
I think you should shoot yourself first and then put your lithium batteries in the fire.
I'm getting tired of the word lithium. I think we need to change. I'd like to hear us start talking beryllium this year.
Mm. Oh, well, someone didn't take their lithium today, I
guess. Thorium is coming back.
Ooh. Thorium reactor?
That's not even the same group, is it?
No.
It is periodic.
It is periodic.
They're all periodic. They're all words.
It's actinic.
That's a good word. They're all metals.
Good memory.
Actinic?
Yeah, it's an is it an actinide group?
It's an actinide series, but I think actinic is a word.
Mm.
And nobody knows what it means. It's one of those things like jejune. It's a good word, but nobody really.
What is it? Jejune?
Jejune. I'm feeling jejune.
What is that one?
Thorium is a actinide.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
It's actinic. It's part of the actinide series.
Because thorium is TH, not TM, right? Otherwise, it's a lithium.
No.
All right. Yeah, and it is...
Like TM is tellurium.
What was the other one we were talking about that it is nowhere near?
Beryllium.
It's right after lithium.
Yeah, it should be below it.
Beryllium is one of the non-metals. Yeah.
It's a non-metal.
Yeah, that's like near sodium.
If you're an astronomer...
Sodium's a metal.
I would become a household word this year.
I'm sorry, this was labeled.
So why should beryllium be a household word? Just because it's the next one up?
Why should anything be a household word?
Oh, fair enough.
Well, I think beryllium is a better household word than, say, crystal meth.
It already is.
I was going to say, which word is an American more familiar with right now?
I was going to say, well, if we have household names, what are maybe apartment hold names? I mean, that could be household names, but maybe it's for a more compact space.
Can there also be Airbnb hold names? Short-term rental names?
I think we should just stick to primary residence properties. Okay. I feel. I don't know. Because then where does the buck stop, you know?
That leads us back to mattress. Greg getting rid of household names.
Next to my lithium batteries.
You want to match next to your lithium batteries?
No, I'm hiding the money under my mattress next to the lithium battery. it all keeps me warm in the cold, cold winter. Especially when they burn up.
Beryllium is the mirror surface used in the James Webb Space Telescope. It's lightweight and it therefore is thin enough so that they could sling it out to L2. So, it's also used in
lasers.
What's
L2?
Lagrangian.
The second
Lagrangian point.
Yeah.
What's the Lagrangian point?
Yeah, where where the Earth balances out the sun. Special place.
You mean gravitationally?
Yeah. The thing's just sort of, it's like being in the doldrums if you're in L2. Nothing's pushing you around. No wind. You just sit there.
I feel like I'm in L2.
Yeah. That's not
I'm in Lagrange. And I feel so jejune. Je suis jejune.
Oui?
Yeah.
So I don't got nothing grinding my gears, but I think it's pretty cool project. Restored some cast iron using no electricity and only minimally irritating chemicals.
Okay, what kind of cast iron are we talking about? Is it a pan?
Pans, yeah.
Okay.
Pans. It should work for anything, though.
What'd you do?
Well, you mix, it's a cool little recipe. For every 100 grams of water, you mix in 100 grams of citric acid and 63 grams of sodium bicarbonate, baking soda. And it creates a sodium citrate solution that can chelate iron, preferentially selecting the iron oxide off the surface of a cast iron pan.
Now, will this smooth the surface?
It will not smooth it. You will have to do that mechanically.
And is that better than, say, Drano?
Yeah, because I think Drano would aggressively attack the base metal.
Okay, and the problem with that would be?
Well, you don't really want to remove the base metal so much as you want to just remove the iron.
But isn't it all iron? What's the difference?
The base metal has not been oxidized and doesn't have all the pitting. Okay. Like, you want to avoid pitting it more with a chemical?
No. You want to pit it.
Why?
You do not want a smooth surface.
What are you talking about?
If you're talking about a cast iron pan, you do not want a smooth surface.
Sure
you want to pit it as much as possible.
You don't.
Pity tis true.
Nah, man.
The pitted surface becomes non-stick. It helps things.
No,
Hath Cody wrought?
I don't know. A debate.
Iron rot.
We're gonna sit here and talk about cast iron now.
Yes, absolutely.
And polymerization.
My cast iron pan has been smoothed over the years of use, and it's much stickier than it used to be.
That means you need to season it better.
No. The texture's lost. It is seasoned perfectly.
Grease.
And I use ghee in between each use to make sure it's like a nice high temperature.
But do you polymerize that ghee every time?
No, because it's usually sitting on top of a nice set of polymerized peanut oil.
This is very important because in the future, all cooking will be done with cast iron over induction coils. That's the electric stove that does not generate any hand-burning heat.
I'm with you.
So cast iron, the question is, does the chef want his surface smooth or rough? And this is still a toss-up. We don't really
rough. Know. You want a rough surface?
He says rough. And Cody says smooth.
Although, I mean, I've cooked on both. I don't find it makes a difference.
Yeah,
I've cooked on a very, very smooth cast iron, made scrambled eggs, just comes right off. And I've cooked on rough cast iron where I've cooked like a steak and it just stuck like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what?
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No.
You go.
I was going to say, I think what makes more of a difference, though, is the temperature. Mm. Because if you don't have it heating, you know, already hot enough, obviously it's not going to get the sizzle and then you're not going to create that gap. But on the other side, and a lot of people don't really think of it this way, if it gets too hot, obviously, you're going to burn everything, but a lot of times that'll create, like, a bond that's really, really tough to get out. But you have to be really careful to make sure you're not going too hot or too cold.
And not only that, when you get it too hot, the actual polymerized layer of oil can flake. You can actually bake the seasoning right off of it if you get it too hot.
All right, well, sounds like her steak's got all the sizzle. I'm going to counteract you just a little bit by saying you're doing it wrong. You put some butter in the pan, whatever it is, get a little in there. You stick your steak in the pan, get it nice and hot first, hot first, put the steak down. Touch the steak. If it doesn't want to move out of the pan, go smoke a cigarette.
Don't move it.
Go smoke a bowl, drink a beer. Yep. Come back in 5 minutes, touch the steak again. It will slide right off the surface once it forms its own crust.
Yeah, you got to be patient.
Yeah.
Cooking advice aside, I thought it was cool that I didn't have to set up a battery or a voltage source.
All right.
And
you just
the pans came out
chemicals.
Clean. Yeah. Yes, just citric acid. You can get that from a hardware store or Walmart.
It comes in a white powder.
Yep. Don't breathe it in. That's not fun.
Oh,
not even a little bit.
It burns.
Even a little bit, it burns you.
Better living through chemistry.
I love how our key words have been, L2, actinide, beryllium, steak.
Steak.
Yeah, if
steak.
We remember, I think it was like the 2010s, I like those word clouds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a very interesting word cloud.
How does lithium and beryllium...
steak.
And L2 or L1 Lagrangian relate to steak.
Yeah.
They all have protons.
Yeah.
If you run them up most basic, they're all made of atoms. They're all...
Well, Lagrangian is not made of atoms. It's a concept.
There's a lot of atoms out there just floating.
But L2, it's just a concept.
Concept.
It's a theoretical or conceptual point in space. concept of a point in space.
Christmas is just a concept. You saying that warm feeling I get is a lie, too?
Wait. Hey.
Well,
you spent the whole Christmas show tearing down Santa Claus.
Don't answer
you
that.
Really did.
He really did. Jesus.
We're going to start calling you Krampus.
Okay. Yeah, I will find your children, shove them in my sack, and beat them with
torch.
Oh, wow. In your sack. Okay, let's, okay. Hey. Just as a note, the Catholic Church had to add like $800 million to their fund in California for sack things. So don't be talking about Krampus and sack things, right? I have questions about the polar vortexes. Polar vortices? Is that what it is?
No.
Polar vortices?
No.
Vortices.
Weatherman, we have questions. Okay. How cold will it be
in
4 weeks?
First of all, if you want, yes, it's going to be cold. Guess what, folks? The next couple of weeks are going to be nasty cold, and if you want to blame someone, you can blame California, Oregon, Washington, because they're going to be so warm. And so
wet. Mild
that basically that heat over them pushes north, which then pushes the polar jet stream down over the rest of the continental United States. And over the next week, it's expected to dip down to like Alabama, Louisiana, Texas. If you got family in Texas, send them blankets now before their grid collapses again.
They are wholly unprepared.
Yeah. Like, no, they're fully prepared to deport everyone that we need to, but they are not prepared to keep their citizens warm, so.
It's winter in America. Remember that song from the 60s?
No, I don't. What's the
70s.
Winter in America.
Gil Scott-Heron.
Oh,
it is winter. I'm not going to sing it.
But. I don't remember that one of his. I remember Whitey on the Moon, and the revolution will not be televised.
Yep, that's right.
It won't be, but it'll be broadcast on YouTube.
It not will TikTok, be tweeted.
Ban will be put in place one day before Donald Trump can do anything about it.
Well, maybe it'll be warm in California, but they've been living through this
fire
they call atmospheric river, which has penalized them for the curse of being in a climate that's warming. And it's pulling all this wet air out of northern Pacific Ocean and dumping it on the coast.
Yep.
And so
the potential,
you know,
they're
entitled to a little break in the action. Not that that gives them the right to freeze Louisiana down.
Well, I doubt it's intentional.
I doubt it.
Well, you can start calling it.
Are you sure?
Start calling it intentional when no one pays attention.
Well, that's attentional, not intentional.
I mean, that, you know, it's the fact that the climate's warming is just, you know, categorized as a hoax. Can't possibly be. And then you see these oddball effects.
I blame the Democrats.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Of course,
if there's
always
really global warming, why are we going to be so cold? You know?
Yeah. Bring a snowball to Congress.
Yeah. Bring a Florida snowball where they might have in a week or so. And they'll be like, hey, had a snowball fight in the Capitol steps.
In about 20 days or so, mentioning global warming will get you tossed right into jail.
Burn more
books?
Carb.
Yep.
Yeah. Hydrocarbons. More hydrocarbons. I mean, if you want to make the earth into a living hell. Get started.
Los Angeles does their fair share of that. Sitting in traffic.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. All the smells.
Yeah.
It's not smelly now. The cars are really efficient, so you don't get, like, noxiously smelly, but there's still just
exhaust
everywhere.
Speaking of hydrocarbons, has anybody heard of this new engine, the Spike engine?
No.
It sounds
cool. Enlighten us and our audience.
It's called Spike.
Yeah. It, you know, I'm thinking, wow, this is really. I was reading about it in Wired. And the advantage of it is that it actually changes shape under heat, which is a big advantage for an aircraft that is, you know, like, you know, going to really high altitude or very high speed.
Oh, you're talking about air. I thought you were talking about a car engine, an aerospike engine.
Yes.
Yeah. It changes form. So, it's like an open combustion motor.
I'm thinking, wow, this is a game changer. And what is it running on? Kerosene.
It's jet fuel.
Hey,
yeah.
Rockets, SpaceX. SpaceX rockets run on kerosene.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking. We need beryllium.
Run on methanol, I think.
That's right.
Where is my beryllium motor? That's going to be our.
But thing. Kerosene rockets are like what we've used for a century. Like almost like all ballistic rockets and stuff like that. Kerosene rockets.
Yeah.
Easy engines.
Well, this does not augur well for climate change.
Well, you could, but kerosene, though, can't you make the same similar material out of, like, corn and whatever as fuel? For a high economic end.
Cornicene.
Cornicene.
Yeah.
Was that what they're going to call this era? The Cornicene era? Like, we have the Anthropocene.
And the Cornicene.
And then we have the Cornicene era right after that.
Yeah.
It's just marked by incredible amounts of corn.
The Mayans believe that humans were created from several different materials that all failed, clay, wood, hay, until they were finally made of corn. And that is what they became, finally.
The corn people.
The maize people.
And now we have...
Creepy.
The people that are made out of what? Plastic.
Microplastics.
Yeah, microplastics and high fructose corn syrup.
Exactly. Yes,
that's 90% high fructose corn syrup, man. That's why I float more.
I was going to say Cheetos, but...
I was 3D printed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you could, you know, do a lot of things with a 3D printer and perhaps, you know...
Yeah, they're 3D printing, like, things that they use in surgery.
Yeah.
Biomimetic structures,
yeah,
things for bones to grow over,
to grow into,
yeah, other tissues to grow over.
I just watched a
scaffold,
AI designed rocket engine get 3D printed, and apparently they're starting to figure out rocketry better than we can. And eventually, we're going to have a point where a human goes to service it, and they're just not going to know what to do.
Well, one of the guys that work with 3D prints by the sintering method in zero gravity.
What?
In zero gravity.
Yeah.
You have to go to space for that.
He ships the barrels of goodies up to space, and then there's a 3D printer floating around, and it makes platforms, like meters, kilometer scale platforms. Wow. 3D printing them.
I'm sorry. No.
There is no
kilometer
scale thing in space.
They're not doing this.
Oh, definitely doing this.
What scale?
Kilometer scale.
No, you're wrong.
External? No,
right, because there's no gravity to counteract, so you can have very thin truss works.
Who's printing that?
Well, that's in theoretical stage, right?
In Seattle, you know, his outfit was called Tethers Unlimited, and then it got bought up by Military Industrial Complex. And sure, they're doing it. They want big platforms, you know, like the equivalent of aircraft carriers, but for space-related.
You're not saying that they 3D print them at a kilometer scale in space, are you?
Right now.
I'm not only saying it. I know it's going on.
How thick?
Very thin.
So what about all the space junk flying around?
Yeah, right.
At what
doing it at
distance?
Geostationary,
23,000?
If you do it at geostationary, there's very little to worry about. The separation between the platforms.
Because that's a very high orbit.
Yes.
Yeah. So if
your orbit doesn't matter.
If this is actually happening, I'm pretty sure that's top secret, Tom. I'm pretty sure that's beyond top secret if it's happening.
Yeah, if it's
happening. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
we shouldn't be talking about top secret DARPA projects.
A Faraday cage. I know he was saying. At first he was saying, I like working for the military because, you know, you get money in advance and it's a lot of money. And then he was saying, oh, my God, they put me in a Faraday cage so I couldn't talk to my family or anybody. I was like, you know, they sent him off to this remote location and, you know, kind of cut his communications down to nothing.
You become their property.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
You get to live inside a skiff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know people right now getting government contracts, and I'm starting to wonder if I should keep talking to them.
Yeah, they're dead inside.
You could see it in their eyes.
Whoa. Eye.
And talking about, you know, let's do the defense against dark arts, shall we, Brian?
Defense against dark arts?
Is that a number station?
No. What's a number station?
A number station, Brian, is a classic term from spycraft that has been used for a very long time, at the least since World War I. If you are a radio enthusiast and you listen to on the right frequencies, once in a while you'll hear a station just with usually a woman's voice in English broadcasting alphanumeric codes or
sequences
or whole words. Yep.
Yeah.
Like, you'll just hear somebody like 1-2-B-3-C, 1-2-B-3-C, just repeating it over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of a number station is it's a one-point contact for spies. If you have someone in the field and they need to get a message, you just activate your number station, you send out your coded message, your spies receive it, and nobody can tell that your spy has received their transmission, no matter where they are in your country. Because all they need for it is a simple radio. Sometimes you might need a shortwave radio to get it. But still, this is not, like, difficult equipment. And it's not suspicious equipment either.
Nowadays, you don't even need a shortwave radio. You just need a software-defined radio and a long enough wire.
That's right.
Just alligator clipped into the port.
100%. And if you can get that working, you're receiving signals that can't be tracked. Now, and that is the entire point of me talking about a number station. We're your number station. We're your point of information that cannot be tracked. If you try to get the information we're talking about online, there is a metadata paper trail that can be tracked back to you. If we give you a piece of information, nobody can tell that you have it unless they're sitting right next to you. So keep that in mind on into the future. That we're going to have special messages for you that will be one way. Like, one of them is, if people out there are getting a little worried about the world we're getting into, it's time to organize while you can. And I'm not telling anybody to do anything except maybe a little research.
Pay attention. Yeah.
There's certain groups out there like the Sons of Liberty.
Yeah, guys like that. Yeah, I don't know. We're not advocating. What were you saying? They exist, you know?
No. But they're out there, and you might want to find them. And, look for their Discord server if you want to just drop in and say hello.
Yeah, you should just say hello. Yeah, it's all good.
But, as we go on to the... Thanks, Brian. As we keep going, we're going to be able to give you information that, like, again, you can't access online, because if you did, people would know about it. So... Hmm. Look here for future spots of recommendation.
And also, in general, don't freak out, but know what your footprint is. Just know what your footprint is. Know your exposure. Just be aware of these things. Who you are in the world and how you're moving. That's all we're saying.
Phone. Don't go out in society.
A man's gotta know his number station. Clint Eastwood.
Okay. Does anybody have anything else for the dark arts segment tonight? Any special tips you got?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about it, those apps where you can use, like, you take a picture of a receipt. Let's say you go to Target and you buy a bunch of stuff. You can take a picture of your receipt and send it to this company, and that company magically gives you, like, 55 cents just for a photo of your receipt. Who cares, right? It's not, you know, any extra work. You already bought everything. What's the, you know, what's the harm in getting a couple of extra cents, right? But, I mean, that's just one example of many to kind of think critically about the fact that, okay, you're getting money from, you know, from doing something as harmless as just taking a picture of your receipt.
Seemingly harmless.
Yeah, why are you getting paid for just giving that information freely? Who's interested in that?
There's no such thing as free money.
Advertisers are interested in all of your data so that they can target you and target you.
But it's free. What is the possible downside
to that?
No,
it's not free, Brian. They're actually paying you, which is why you should be even more suspicious.
Free money.
You get free money to buy the free lunch.
Oh, exactly. So it does exist. It exists just like WGXE, 90.7 FM. That's still Hudson Acre.
And in this case, perfect. You can send 55 cents to WGXE.
Yeah, send your 55 cents to us. If you're doing that stupid receipt crap, send us your money. You don't need it.
So let's take a little musical break here with one of our favorite bands. No, not really. It's actually from the Prophet Moore. Not Alan Moore, no, no.
No, not Michael Moore either.
Not Michael Moore, no, not Michael Moore. We're talking Trevor Moore.
In a universe that's infinite, like many theorize ours is, there are parallel worlds where every possibility lives. So a planet somewhere out there, the history the same as ours is written. The only difference is that everyone's a kitten.
Kitty history just like ours. Kitty dinosaurs.
The kitties driving cars.
Kitty history.
Somewhere in quantum space.
Mathematically, this had to take place.
Kitty world wars and kitty mass graves.
Kitty colonialism and kitty slaves.
It's
stars.
Just like us, Kitty Columbus sailed until he saw land, but then quickly got off so he could poop in the sand. They formed the first kitty cities and kitty towns, then they wake up at night just to run around. They had their own little kitty civil war, but found some string and forgot what they were fighting for. It's kitty history, and it's just like ours. CIA. Then Lyndon doubled down on Kitty Vietnam, and they bought more helicopters and kitty bombs from a company where his wife was the main stockholder, and they made a kitty fortune for the war was over. Kitty history, cutting planet like ours. A little kitty at the CIA, who helped kill Kennedy in Dallas that day, did so darn well that his career got a push. A kitty named president's next, all while getting kitty Saudi Arabian checks. It's kitty history, kitty's taking charge. Kitty Bush waits his turn to ascend to his throne. Gets his cronies in power, kitty USA overthrown. The kitty Saudis know how he can repay his debt, so he starts a war with Iraq, their number one threat. But kitty Saddam is not ejected, and the very next year, kitty George isn't re-elected. His son stops his governors. Then one steals the election for the other. New kitty Bush has got to finish the Saudis' mission.
So he has a report made by a commission.
This is the start of new war, as far as we can attest. You'd need a new kitty Pearl Harbor, and we all know the rest. Kitty history, exactly like ours. Kitty history.
Out in the space-time loops.
Kitty leaders.
And kitty baking groups.
Surveillance states.
Kitty terrorism, kitty government pay. Kitty is green.
Come on and sing.
Six kitty companies run everything.
It's
kitty history somewhere out in the stars.
And we're back.
Meow.
That's such a stupid, great song. It's
has everybody got their kitten mittens ready? Because you're going to need them.
Kitten mittens?
Kitten mittens.
I don't have kitten mittens.
Then you haven't watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
No, I have not. I basically live under a rock.
Fix that.
Fix that. Fix that, you guys. Come on. What's going on over there? Oh, lordy.
We're having our own little interaction. Oh, because somebody brought us some good scotch.
Oh, yeah.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Oh, shucks.
Oh, yeah. Smooth.
Yeah, baby.
A man's got to know his limitations.
Wow, just and then, magnum force.
See, the life is knowing your limitations and then just waving at them as they go right on.
That is the way to start the new year, really. Like the, I would say January entirely.
Absolutely. Like, all you people out there with your resolutions, they're not going to work. You know it.
Wow, this is getting like Santa was last month.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's hear it, Joe.
But no, you idiots think like a certain date on the calendar is going to give you this magic amount of like willpower to finally accomplish your stupid goal. Knock it off. Just learn to enjoy your life. If you like that cheesecake, be fat. Enjoy it. Oh, my God.
Let me hear the church say amen.
I will say, for those of you who aren't picking this up, this is a code we are sending you. This is a code.
Free your mind.
Just
free your mind.
Beryllium.
Beryllium.
Beryllium will be our code word. Beryllium.
When the man in the dark suit walks up to you, beryllium.
Look at him and say beryllium. Turn and walk away.
Wow.
The Slender Man will be upon you. This is good scotch.
It is. I just thought of something I wanted to ask you guys. Beryllium.
Yes.
You were talking about sintering, Tom. Can you sinter any metal?
I thought beryllium was not a metal.
What?
It's
unless you're an astronomer, and then anything above hydrogen is a metal.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Right.
That's right.
It's a very reactive metal, if I recall.
It's also a part of a lot of, what do you call it?
Alloys?
Alloys.
Yeah.
Used to alloy things, definitely.
Right. It's actinic.
So
beryllium is
it's
brittle.
It's also found in alien UFO
brittle, yeah.
Landing sites, too.
Brittle beryllium.
Is it poisonous beryllium?
Terribly.
Yes.
Yeah. On its own, sure.
It's permanent lung scars.
Right there.
Don't breathe
right
the dust.
Yeah.
You know what I found out? I used to work with osmium when I was on the electron microscope.
What did you used to work with?
Osmium.
Oh,
and
wow.
It turns out that osmium blackens the white of your eyes.
Whoa.
Because you use it to bind to proteins when you're doing electron microscopy. So it binds really tightly to proteins. Well, guess what the whites of your eyes are.
Jeez,
and I just wonder, how did you find that out?
Some poor guy, like the poor guy with the demon core. How bad is plutonium? Oh, no.
Finding anything out that day, he just screwed up.
And he knew.
He just manslaughtered.
And he knew.
To try to answer your question very specifically about the osmium, like, so the osmium is not used in the microscope. It's used in the sputtering machine, is it not?
It's not used in sputtering. It's used in staining. So it binds really tightly to the proteins in a cell.
Okay.
Right, but you have to vaporize that material, right?
Well, that's done more for scanning electron microscope because you need a metallic coating.
Oh, right? To get the shape.
What they do is they evaporate gold and palladium onto the surface of the sample.
Which is all the same technique that they use to make coatings on lenses.
Originally, the electron microscopes were all transmission. And someone said, well, why don't we do reflection? So that's when they started to do the sputtering. Mm. And they do this sputtering in metals, aluminum, for example. So you take your specimen, and after it's sputtered, you can see it in a vacuum as a reflection. And it's a three-dimensional.
So then how does the one you were using work? With the osmium dye
on transmission,
that's a transmission.
Yeah,
it would transmit.
So
through
you have a thin slice of cellular material, and it binds tightly to the proteins in the slice.
Jeez, I don't know how you would get it in your eye.
It stains your eye black, and you know if you want to be a spy, you want black.
Here's osmium in your eye, pal.
Yeah, I mean, you can get around in the dark.
Osmium eye tattoo.
Yeah, that's.
I was going to say, there's people that will pay for that.
Yeah. Ninjas always blacken their whites of their eyes.
Well, also, just people that put, like, donuts in their head.
Yep. And bolts. They mount the bolts underneath so they can put on little spikes or prosthetics. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
But I'd keep it out of your wrought iron pan. I think your citric acid is much better.
Gentle. Yeah, it's very gentle.
You can even get
I stuck my finger in the solution and it was
You're
fine.
Soaking in it.
Yeah, I was soaking. Soaking my fingers.
His acrylics fell right off.
You just don't go like crazy with a piece of steel wool and a little hot water.
It was really, really rusted. And it was weird surfaces too.
Yeah.
Like got a deal on it for how bad it was.
Yep. Like they left it out in the rain for many seasons.
The pan I cook on, I literally dug out of my friend's yard and was like, I'm keeping this. And he's like, okay, I just shooted it.
You definitely don't want to cook on that, man. If your friend was actually shooting at like the inside surface of it.
The lead did not penetrate that. I also went down with it with a grinder. But,
nothing okay. like lead.
Okay. If you ground it, if you trust that you ground it all off, great. But, you know,
the lead
could also have just, you know, galled into the metal.
Beginning to explain something about you, Joe.
Right.
Yeah.
Those omelets, those delicious steaks.
It explains so much.
Gradually, your memory capacity began to shift. Your logic.
Is that why the sky is plaid?
Yeah. Right. It might have tasted good.
And colors smell funny.
I ate an amaryllis mushroom.
You became irritable. And
you've eaten an amaryllis.
Now I'm irritable because...
Guys, we're burying the lead here.
Why?
Tom has once upon a time...
I ate an amaryllis mushroom, and I can report they are delicious.
What?
You can't get a better omelet. And you only will have one, but...
I can only do this trick once.
Yeah. They had me over here in the local hospital and were pouring activated charcoal through my intestines.
Wait, you
actually ate an Amanita?
Yeah.
You've eaten an Amanita.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Oh, man.
I mean, it could have been great, but no, it's also awful.
No.
It tastes.
No.
Yes.
I know people that eat these because they're trying to get high on them.
Yeah,
no.
Forbidden snack.
I was thinking everything was so good I could even eat a mushroom I didn't know.
Oof. Wow.
I was on a sugar high of sorts, and I had a grant. My wife was going to have a baby. Everything was going just so well. Because the grant was really not just because I had some income. The research was going really well. So, I mean, I have a theory that maybe I did die. And, you know, you don't actually die. You just come back older and you continue to deteriorate, but you never really leave. That's a theory of mine.
Yeah, that's called
I like
hell.
You know, parallel universe.
That's called hell.
Anyway, I'm one of the few people who can report how tasty they are.
Don't do that! No! No, they're not!
I'm not inviting anyone to follow in my footsteps. I'm just saying that I've been there and I came back.
You think you came back. Part of you thinks you didn't.
I remember the taste.
So when you say it's an Amanita mushroom, it was like the stand, you know, your ideal picture of a mushroom where it's the red with the white little spots.
Yeah, well, they're white. They're white when they have a little skirt around.
What's your picture when you see think of Alice?
Oh, it's one of those Amanitas. Yeah. The ones that don't look like that ideal fly agaric picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're called Teufelspilz in German, which means you'll go straight to hell.
Yeah.
Devil's
Devil's buttons.
Devil's buttons.
So, I don't know. The lead in your pan might have affected your perceptions. I don't know. The lead in the paint.
Yeah, I was going to say, lead in the paint. Lead in all the paint around here. Yeah.
The lead in the gasoline. Leaded gasoline. And I was listening to this guy, Manly, that does a space YouTube. And
Manly.
Scott Manly was talking about the fact that prop planes use leaded fuels.
They do?
Still?
Dear God, we're all going to die.
But they're... So propeller planes.
So just the avgas still has lead.
Over.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It won't work right without it.
They need 100 octane. Yeah. And
so they're spraying that on our corn.
Methyl lead.
Well, the older planes.
Yeah, they're spraying it on everything.
Couldn't they get 100 octane through, like, I don't know.
So it's not the octane. Like it's the fact that the lead they put in the gasoline helps to lubricate and
two different things.
Lubricate and cool.
Lead is another.
Mm. Yeah, the lubricate and cool the exhaust valve.
Which both end up
So you literally have to change out the exhaust valve with a hardened seat in the head of every airplane out there. And if you did that for every one of the old airplanes, they would then have to be certified because no plane can fly without certified parts.
Oh, geez,
so man. It's all about the exhaust valve not sinking and going
to hell. There's a lot of momentum behind ethyl methyl lead.
But the newer engines will have the right exhaust valves, and you don't need all that. It's just the older ones don't have the hardened exhaust valves.
But the thing is, they keep those engines running for a very long
forever. Time. No, there's engines from the 1930s that are running still. They're still flying in the sky.
Right, no, I know it.
Yeah.
You tell them that's a drone.
All those 1930s, 1940s airplanes are still flying, yes.
Well, actually, the push to get rid of the lead was with the drones, because they were starting to put up drones, and propellers were becoming very important to the military. And they didn't want to have to rely on this oddball fuel. It's odd now because no one uses it.
Well, a lot of the drones, the flat ones, will like use two-stroke motors, so those just need oil in them too.
Yeah.
Not so much lead, but they do need oil that are burning. Yeah. You can't have it in any other device in the world.
Good old two-stroke pre-mix model planes.
Yeah, right.
Is used for military drones. Two-stroke engines work fine.
They work good because they're very powerful and light. That's why
and
you use them.
Reliable.
as reliable as they need to be, yeah.
Tell
powerful
that to
as
my
hell.
Meter.
It's, okay. Well.
Yeah, well, those have to go through winter here.
I was going
to
say.
That's a whole different thing.
Does your weed eater get non-ethanol gas?
Yes.
Only?
Yes.
Okay, that's a good start. Do you take care of it? Do you have a consistent amount of oil?
Well, the idea that it's non-ethanol is kind of weird to me, because then you have products that preserve your two-stroke fuel.
Yeah, don't,
that are actually just ethanol.
Yeah, congratulations. It preserves your fuel, but have you ever seen what ethanol does to an aluminum engine?
More like the rubber parts.
The rubber tubing?
The rubber parts.
It's black and all sorts of... It makes a weird corrosion.
Yeah.
Like...
Aluminum naturally has a dark black oxide layer that you can rub off.
One molecule.
It's a layer of oxide. The Project Farm video on ethanol in his weed eater engines.
Who is it? Project Farm?
Project Farm.
Yeah, it's mostly the gumming of the carburetor circuits.
Ethanol turned the aluminum black.
Yeah, but I don't...
Ethanol fuels made no change to it whatsoever.
I don't think that'll make it not run. What makes them not run is the premix oil in there and the carb gumming up.
Yeah,
the primary
gumming in the carb.
Failure of weed eaters.
And because those little valves are so tiny.
Tiny.
They're tiny. And
plastic.
And they're made of plastic or some other weird... Almost a polymer. I don't even know what they're made of, but they're so
brittle.
There's
a mix of polymers in there,
yeah. It's so brittle, and it can just expand.
Your oil
has to be very correct all the time. Too much oil, and you're going to build up carbon inside the piston. Not enough oil, and the piston will start stripping itself.
Yeah, that's another thing. The carbon, the piston head, top
getting,
of the piston.
Getting stuck or something, yeah.
It's carbon, and
you just
scrape it out, though.
Like,
it's really easy.
I make a big batch of fuel, and then I use that for the year.
Right.
And it's always the same going through. Never ethanol. And mine seems to work just fine.
That's really a concern anymore, because people are just phasing out two-stroke engines everywhere.
Yeah, now it's electric.
Even Brian doesn't have a two-stroke.
I don't have a two-stroke.
Yeah.
The guy who rebuilt a motorcycle engine at the age of 9 does not have a two-stroke anymore.
Yep.
So what you're saying is when I'm 90 and I'm still using my Toro that never dies, my neighbors are going to be like, what is
they're
going to
be.
What is that
smell? You know the smoke that comes out of them?
Well,
noxious.
I also have friends that they have the electric chainsaws and stuff.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We still need to break out the real chainsaw
for a real big log. Yeah,
of course you do.
So, and I mean the real chainsaw that runs on gas.
Yep. Until they make something that is so hard to carry it's impractical, but with a large enough bar that you don't care.
You don't care.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Right. What about lasers?
Lasers.
Nobody's using a laser to cut a log.
Well, how about a beryllium laser?
Well, the reason that you don't want to use a laser is because
the Earth in half.
Yeah, it'll cut the Earth in half, exactly. And then the reflection will cut you in half.
Interesting.
That's a consideration.
You know what? I used a water jet to cut through quarter-inch steel.
Water jets are really cool.
Yeah,
we made stencils out of quarter-inch steel for the city of Hackensack using a water jet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also grit in that.
It'll cut
right?
glass.
There's
so
grit in the
water.
Water
jets can work without grit.
Okay.
They don't need the grit that they use as garnet. It's just garnet sand.
Yeah.
Sandpaper. It's of hardness 7. You don't need it, like, for if you're just cutting something that's, like, I don't know, organic, like meat. Or your hand.
You don't want it if you're cutting meat.
The pressure
of a meteor shower. Been waiting all day to say that.
A meteor shower.
Cody's just like, why?
Sorry.
It's all good.
I apologize.
You needed to do it. You
never
just had to let it out.
Yeah. Not for a joke. No. Oh, that was
See,
good.
Now my definition of the word cathartic is just, I feel like you just looked so happy to get that off your chest.
He was so very happy.
I feel years younger.
Yep. 35,000 PSI water can cut through anything soft. Without any abrasive.
But you need abrasive to go through steel, right?
It can't cut through hard things. It's going to take it a really long time. Like steel, you're going to want abrasive.
Inconel?
Inconel, yeah. It'll cut through Inconel. Cuts through titanium. Cuts through some of the hard... It cuts through carbide.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It'll cut through carbide.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting that most of the ways that humans have of cutting through stuff is with motors and stuff. Nature uses water, air.
Right, fluids.
Yeah.
So the concept of the water jet is to think of Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls is being cut back at how fast per year? Less than an inch per year?
Yeah, probably.
Sorry, it's cutting back?
Yeah,
like
so as
you rode away at the edge.
Falls over the edge.
Grinding down
its
edge.
It's grinding down in the edge. It's going to be back somewhere, you know, another 20 miles in 10,000 years, however long it's going to take. The concept of the water jet is taking that, focusing it to a very fine point, and doing it very fast with abrasive. Much harder than the rock that you find in a... At the Niagara Falls.
Cool.
Speed it up.
Pretty cool. Yeah, like, I've seen it cut through damn near anything. Like,
yeah.
I don't think I've seen a diamond cut with water.
The diamond cannot be cut except without, if you had a diamond abrasive, because garnet's softer than...
Oh, you got to literally put diamond on diamond in water.
But it is interesting that the water cools, whereas the laser heats. So... the water jet has an advantage. Then on the other hand, you have to bring it right next to the surface, whereas the laser can get you across the room.
You can get across the room with it.
Yeah. You can cut through something really far away. That's why the military likes it.
Yeah, go, huh? Off with your friend's head.
Yeah.
Reach out and
if
touch someone.
If you made
someone.
The cut so perfect, couldn't it just rebond?
What do you mean?
Like if you
with
cut
a laser?
Head right off with a laser.
Oh.
You held it in place for like a minute. Couldn't the bonds reassert?
What are you talking about?
And pour water on it.
David, I had some experiments.
What are you talking about, Dr. Mengele?
Take Joe to the laboratory. He wants to know.
Bring me the twins. We shall separate them with water.
God.
Wow.
That's you said Mengele.
That's how it starts.
You brought me.
great way to get sepsis, by the way. Don't get a oil or water injection injury. Do not hold your hand in front of pressure washers.
Mm.
You idiot.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's a great way to get sepsis.
Ooh. So, I'm even thinking about it. Yeah,
I got a comment I'm saving for your ass for the after.
Why? Why?
I got something for you, buddy.
Have you held your hand in front of a pressure washer?
Huh?
Have you held your hand in front of a pressure washer?
No, but I did watch this one guy on the news who was like, I was washing this house, I was doing a job, and I got some paint on my shoe, and I just thought for a second I would spray it off.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he took off his shoe, he took off the skin, he took off of, like, everything down to the bone.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Yep, you don't want to do that.
Under pressure.
I'm bad to the bone.
Just everybody's. Everybody's on the same
bad. Bad.
Another round for everyone in the place and bring them all to me.
Yes.
Bring them all to me.
So I think Craig runs his chainsaw on a mixture of oil and scotch, isn't it?
Vroom! I'm telling you, you got to keep the ethanol out of your chainsaw.
You could do that, but it's a different mixture.
You cut trees down with your saw.
It is a different mixture.
Running on ethanol.
You have to run more ethanol because it's...
Before I had a chainsaw, I used to use
less energy. Thank you. Oh, wait, don't... Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Can I overdo it?
No, that's fine.
No, you didn't overdo it. And no, thank
you. Okay. Yes.
I'm definitely warming
Mac
up from that.
Barista.
Straight scotch, shaken.
Max Acton is barista.
Not stirred.
It doesn't matter.
I know. They get that benefit.
That's see?
That's what I do when I cook with wine. I go a little for you, a
little for me.
Yep.
A little.
Pretty soon.
If it's good wine.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
No, you should be using good wine if you're cooking with it. I mean, if you're going to, like, just deglaze a pan, you can use a cooking wine. But if it's not worth drinking, you probably shouldn't be cooking with it. It just is a...
Well, I'm about to make a beef bourguignon.
Oh, that's cool.
So what's the wine I should be using?
The dark red stuff.
The dark red
stuff.
Like
a Bordeaux.
Well, I do have a dark red cooking wine.
Ew. And, well,
you know, it calls for a lot of wine.
It does.
All right, well then.
But it's all boiled off.
Cheap, like.
I can't afford.
$2 chuck. What is it still $2?
Would normally be used in France.
And also probably be the same price as the cheap stuff in France.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, don't worry about what the French use. Just use you use. Because, you know, the French, they're uppity.
They have good fries, though.
What?
They have good fries.
They got a what?
French fries.
Oh. Freedom fries.
We're free of you, man. Don't you dare say that here, sir.
No.
The French.
Freedom. Oh, that's the freedom fries.
You riled us all up.
The French simply call them frites, which is fry. You know,
freedom.
Frites.
The British call them chips.
It's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Home frites.
We call them, give me another side of fries.
Yeah.
Not fat and bloated enough. I need to lubricate my intestinal tract.
I'm not made of corn. I'm made of taters. Okay, taters and corn.
Cooked in corn oil. Yeah, that's right.
At least you're diversifying your vegetables.
Yeah.
Starch and more starch.
Starch and other starch. Sugar starch. Sugar starchy sugar.
I get both of them.
Go down to IHOP, have some good breakfast.
Fun
based on the food groups of candy and candy.
Oh, good God. Fun YouTube channel, Arduino versus Evil. Go check it out. He does cool little experiments on the polymerization of various oils, including olive oil, canola oil. You've heard of canola oil, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually mixed with soybean oil and your vegetable oils.
Mm-hmm.
Peanut 90 oil.
90-weight oil.
I don't know about 90-weight. I think that's a synthetic oil. So
olive oil is like, you have to be very careful on where you get olive oil.
Well, he goes into that too.
Because it might not be olive oil.
Yeah, about where you get it from, it's probably being cut with some other vegetable oil.
And then, of course, if you get it from Italy, there are problems there. It's very complicated.
So you gotta watch out because your dealer might be stepping on it, is what you're saying. I hate when they step on it like that.
Yeah.
It makes me mad. I want to go right back there. Take care of business.
If you're listening to the Singularity Radio program, if you want to keep listening to us, we will be heading into the after show very soon.
But I want to know about olive oil.
Well, then you're going to have to head on over to WGXE.org, click on Listen, and look for the Singularity tab to pop up. You'll find an audio stream, much like the main audio stream on WGXE, and you'll be able to hear us instead. And if you don't, in a couple of seconds, you'll be hearing us kick over to Station ID and whoever comes in after us. I am not looking at the schedule just yet.
It's going to be great, though. Yeah, it'll be great.
It's going to be awesome. But if you don't want to do that, just come on over to the after show, where we're going to loosen right up and start swearing heavily.
No.
We're going to get to the afterbirth and talk about the placenta. So stay tuned. Don't miss the four-letter.